everyone this evening. We're very happy for your presence and how wonderful it is that we can raise our voices in song together and to praise God and to teach one another these good principles of Jesus Christ. It's good to see everyone this evening. I want to speak with you tonight about a chapter in the Bible that I think is probably a favorite chapter of a lot of people. It's the story of David and Goliath. And you read about it in 1 Samuel chapter 17. I suppose if you were to ask a lot of young people and perhaps even some older folks as well what their favorite Bible story is, a lot of folks would say the account of David versus Goliath. And it is certainly a very exciting account. There is a lot of historical background that we could talk about to set the stage for this passage. I won't take time to really go into much detail about that. But I think most everyone is familiar with the story. I want to just read the first few verses here of 1 Samuel chapter 17 just to refresh our memory about the basic context of this encounter between young David and the giant Goliath. Verse 1 says, "Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah. And they camped between Succoth and Azekah in Alphaz Damim. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the armies of Israel and said to them, 'Why do you come out and draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us.' Again the Philistine said, 'I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together.' When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." This is an awesome scene. You've got the Philistines, who were a group of seafaring people, at least their ancestors were, who had come in from the Mediterranean area and migrated to this portion of Palestine, and they had begun to occupy 5 major cities along the Mediterranean coast and were working their way in toward the central land. In fact, the city of Gath was that 5th Philistine city that was closest to the territory where the Israelites were. And this Philistine, this giant, 6 cubits and a span, this mighty warrior, comes out in the Valley of Elah and doesn't just make a challenge, but he taunts the armies of Israel. He blasphemes the God of Israel and says that the God of the Philistines, these pagan deities, is obviously more powerful than this so-called God Yahweh of the people of Israel. And he taunts and blasphemes not just Israel, but their God himself. And he challenges them to come up with some warrior that can stand up against him. It is a powerful, powerful scene. And of course, you all know the rest of the narrative. that young David, that eighth son of Jesse, is the one who happened, or perhaps we should say providentially, was there at this occasion, and who heard the taunts of the Philistine, and no Israelite challenger, not Saul, not any of his best warriors, were answering that call to come out and put a stop to this vile Philistine and all that he was saying. And so David answered that call. Now, of course, David, back in chapter 16, had already been secretly anointed by God as the future king of Israel. He was not king yet. Saul was king. But David knew that he had been anointed to be that future king. And in God's own good time, God was going to replace Saul with David. David knew the Spirit of God had come upon him since the time of his anointing. David answers this challenge on this occasion. And as we all know, he doesn't go out with armor and with a spear or a javelin or even his own sword next to his thigh, but instead he goes out with a simple sling and five stones. And he fells that giant with a stone and takes the sword of Goliath and slays the giant and cuts off his head. This whole scene and everything that you read about in this chapter is one that has caught the imagination of so many people over the years. There's so many cases of artwork that we could point to that depict this particular scene. I came across these plates from the 7th century found in Constantinople that depict various episodes in the life of David, and sure enough, this scene of David versus Goliath is one of those. And of course, when you come to the 17th century and the great Italian artist, there are so many artists and sculptors that depict David and Goliath in this particular scene. You have so many of these who take various aspects of what the story tells us and sometimes in rather gruesome detail depict it with their artistic skill. And this is the great story that we want to talk about this evening, and I want to draw some lessons, if I may, just a few, from what we read here in 1 Samuel chapter 17. May I suggest to you, first of all, brethren, that this incident between David and Goliath, it demonstrates for us that God's wisdom is greater than man's wisdom. And God's power is greater than any power that man can try to throw up against God or his people. This is something that David himself recognized, and David recognized this incident as an occasion to prove that very point. Again, going back to 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 45, the text says, "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver, the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands.'" That's a marvelous statement. Here is a young lad. We don't know exactly how old David was on this occasion, but he certainly was someone who had not been in active service in battle. He knew how to use a sling. He'd used it before. But he certainly was not a tested warrior. And here David, this young lad, is standing up to this giant who from his youth had been a valiant warrior for the Philistines. And David does not go out with the traditional accoutrements of a soldier, but instead goes out unarmored to face this Philistine with nothing but his shepherd's sling. Folks, we need to understand that the way that God chooses to accomplish his purposes, so often it's not the way the human beings would conceive of the best way to do that. It's not the kind of idea that human beings would come up with. In fact, I'm reminded of that great statement in Isaiah 55, where Isaiah speaks about this in Isaiah 55 verses 8 and 9. And he says, speaking for God, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." The point that I want us to see is that God's wisdom is not only greater than man's, but man's so-called wisdom is nothing but foolishness when it's juxtaposed with God and his purposes. And one way that God likes to demonstrate that is taking something that, in accordance with human wisdom and what men would deem to be the best way to accomplish something, what human wisdom would say would be the worst way to accomplish something, God likes to take that and use that very thing to accomplish his purposes. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul talked about this in relationship to the gospel of Jesus Christ. In verse 27, Paul said this, "But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised, God has chosen the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God." God likes to take things that human beings would think of as the most absurd idea in the world, and yet that's the way that God accomplishes his great purpose. He does that with David, and has David with a stone fell this giant so that David then can take the giant's own sword and slay him and cut off his head. That's the plan that God had come up with. Nobody in Israel ever would have dreamed that that's how Israel would be saved on that day. And that's just something that epitomizes what God was going to do throughout David's life. David was anointed as the future king. He wasn't the oldest of Jesse's sons. He was the youngest of Jesse's sons. He was the last one that anyone would ever imagine who would be the great king who would succeed Saul and start this new dynasty that would endure forever. And yet, that's the man that God chose. And like Paul says here in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, God has chosen the foolish and supposedly weak things of the world to shame the wisdom of this world, and taken those weak and foolish things and used them for his great purposes and his great glory. God took a lowly carpenter's son, someone who was crucified as a criminal on a cross, and God resurrected him from the dead to then declare to the whole world, "That individual is my incarnate son." Who would have ever imagined that? Lord, why did you have your son take on human flesh and then die as a criminal on the cross so that I could save you human beings from your sins, so that you then could be elevated and be with me forever in that heavenly kingdom, so that I could overturn all the forces of Satan and I could now bring everything aright that sin has corrupted in this world. That's why he had to die. Who would have ever come up with that plan except God? Folks, that's the God that we're serving. And we need to understand that God's wisdom and God's power is so much greater than that of any human being. I also want us to realize this, that God, in His great power, He uses men and women to accomplish great things. In this particular occasion, God was using this young lad to accomplish something absolutely wonderful. Again, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 50 and 51. Here's how the author of this inspired text sort of summarizes all that now happens and sort of brings it to an exclamation point, so to speak. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. God used a human being to accomplish something tremendous. God used one human being on this occasion, one young lad, to ultimately defeat the entire Philistine army. He was the ultimate cause that produced this fleeing of the Philistine army so that they became easy prey for all of the Israelite forces who then chased them down and destroyed them. God uses human beings to accomplish great things. And that means that God sometimes may use you, He may use me, to accomplish something tremendous. You know, I've often thought it was rather interesting when you look at Acts chapter 10 and the story of Cornelius and his conversion. How God chose to teach Cornelius and his household the gospel of Jesus Christ on that occasion. I won't take time to read it, but in Acts chapter 10, verses 4 through 6, you recall that Cornelius had an angel appear to him. The angel did not teach him the gospel of Jesus Christ. The word angel means messenger. And yet the message that the angel gave him on this occasion was not the message of the gospel. Do you know what the angel's message was? I want you to send for this man, Simon Peter, so Peter could teach the gospel to Cornelius and his household. Well, why didn't the angel? He's already talking to Cornelius. Why did the angel just go ahead and inform him about the gospel of Jesus Christ? That's not how God ever did things. The gospel of Jesus Christ was never preached in any kind of real way to human beings by angels. It was preached to human beings by other human beings. And so God was saving the souls of man by having another human being teach them the gospel. And that's God's plan. God accomplishes great things. And God accomplishes great things by taking human beings and using them to do things very often that would maybe seem very small and not of much consequence, but yet remember, we're talking about God's wisdom, and so God in His wisdom accomplishes great things with something that human beings would normally just think of as rather small and insignificant. God used David on this occasion to defeat the Philistine armies. God used human beings to teach the gospel of Jesus Christ to other human beings. And God still does that today. The apostles' teaching is something that we learn by means of these apostolic writings in the New Testament scriptures, and then we can take that to other people. Or we may be the human being who invites a friend or a neighbor to come to services and hear the gospel of Jesus Christ preached by another human being. Do you realize what a great thing God can accomplish through you and your work in that regard? There are people who are enslaved to sin that you know. They may be people who are next door to you. They may be people who are your associates at work. It might be somebody that you have a chance conversation with at the ball field. It might just be somebody that you come into contact with for some other reason. And it may just be that one conversation that you have with that individual on that one occasion that sparks that person to become interested in hearing what maybe you or maybe somebody else is going to convey to them about the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's you, whom God will be using to accomplish something tremendous. Yeah, that's the way God does things. And we need to take advantage of those opportunities. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are struggling Christians. And Satan might have been defeated initially when that person obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, but there's a lot of people that Satan just keeps on working on. And there's a lot of Christians whom Satan is able to discourage through various means, dishearten through various means. And therefore, Satan has virtually got that person back into his fold. Do you realize it might be your phone call letting that person know that you're concerned about them? And would they like to talk sometime? It might be just that little insignificant, seemingly, thing that you do that might be the catalyst for that person ultimately turning their life back around and coming back to the Lord. And God may be intending to use you to accomplish that. There's a lot of people who are struggling with a lot of various things that this life just hits them with. It might be that God's purpose is to use you and your experience in fighting off that cancer, or your experience in dealing with that particular disease that affects you, not just physically maybe, but even emotionally. It might be God's plan to use you to then help somebody else who's weaker, not as able to handle it, but they begin to go through the very thing that you've already been through. And it might be just maybe one conversation you have that absolutely lets that person know that they're not alone, that they're not unique, but that other people have gone through the same thing or maybe are going through the same kind of thing they are going through. You might be the individual that God uses to accomplish something absolutely monumental. We need to be on the lookout for those kinds of opportunities. And I'll give you a final observation here from this story of David and Goliath. We don't know all the details of God's purpose and God's plan and how God's going to accomplish everything. We don't know all those details. Do you know David didn't know that either? Oh, I think David knew that God's Spirit was upon him and that God's Spirit would give him the strength to defeat the Goliath on this occasion. I don't think David just went out there and was making some kind of vain wish or some vain hope when he talked about how God was going to use him to slay Goliath on that day. But David didn't know all the details about it. Look at verse 40. As David is preparing for battle, you know, he refused to take Saul's armor and all of those accoutrements of war. But verse 40 says, he took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in his pouch, and the sling was in his hand. And he approached the Philistine. How did David wind up defeating Goliath? Well, he took one of those 5 stones and he slung that stone and it hit that giant right below his helmet, right in his forehead, and knocked him to the ground unconscious, so David then could kill him with the giant's own sword and cut off his head. But you know what David took with him, though? He had four more stones. He had a stick. Turned out he didn't have to use those. I've had people ask the question, well, why did David select five smooth stones? It just took one. Yeah, but it seemed to me he didn't know how many it was going to take. He didn't know all the details of how God was going to use him on that occasion to defeat the giant. He knew God was going to use him to defeat the giant. He didn't know all the details, though. Seems to me, for all he knew, might take more than one stone. You know what? It just took God one stone. David didn't know all that. And you and I don't know all these things either about how God's going to work or what God's going to do. In fact, I'm reminded of Deuteronomy 29, where there Moses says to Israel, the secret things belong to God, but those that have revealed, those which God has revealed belong to human beings. I mean, we ultimately walk by faith in all of this, and God has given us some information. But we don't know the details of how it's all going to work out. And so we don't know whether it's going to be maybe this conversation with this individual on this particular day that will be that ultimate conversation that is the catalyst for that person ultimately coming to obey the Lord and starting down that path. We don't know if this is going to be the conversation. It might be another conversation. It might be another phone call. It might be a note that you write. It might be that you invite that person for dinner one night, and that provides the setting for you then making that person comfortable enough to where they will then accept your invitation to come to services, whereas before they never would have. It might be that particular occasion. You don't know. But folks, God uses people to accomplish great things, and we don't know all the details. But we need to walk by faith and recognize that God is going to use us to do great things, and so be ready on every occasion and take advantage of every occasion. And it may be that you don't understand why it is that you're going through some of the struggles and trials that you are going through right now. It may be, as I said before, that God's going to use your struggles to then help somebody else later on. You don't know all the details about that. But walk by faith and don't give up. I had a conversation just recently with a friend of mine about prayer. And the friend said, sometimes I pray and I just have to be honest with you. I don't think it does any good. And I said, you need to read the Psalms. Because the psalmists throughout the Psalter so often are lamenting about that very thing. They pray and they pray and they pray, and God hasn't done anything. God hasn't solved their problem. And yet what you learn from all of that is that when things look so dire and when it looks like God is not hearing your prayers and not answering your prayers, that's the time when you need to make certain all the more you don't give up in prayer. You keep on praying, because that's when you're really going to show whether or not you truly are a person who walks by faith and confidence in God and His promises, or whether it's just something you give lip service to. We don't know the future, and we don't know all the details, but we do know the ultimate future. We do know that we have won the victory in Jesus Christ. We know that. We know the devil is going to be defeated just as surely as David knew that Goliath would be felled on that occasion. We may not know all the details about how God is going to accomplish all these things, but we know how the final battle is going to turn out. And folks, we're on the winning side. Don't give up on that. And so what we're saying this evening as we look at this story of David and Goliath is that God's wisdom is greater than man's wisdom. Remember that this week. And God uses human beings to accomplish great things. And you're a human being, and God may be intending to accomplish great things with you. And we don't know all the details of how God's going to work everything out. But we know that our all-wise and all-powerful God is going to accomplish His purpose. And so remember that this week. And look for opportunities, even for you to do things that might seem small and insignificant, but that God may be intending to use to accomplish great and mighty things. I appreciate so very much your kind attention this evening. Is there someone who needs to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ? Can we assist you in some way? If that is the case, won't you let that be known while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement?